Nice little fun song. That's Brenda Boykin on Club de Beluga's Straight to Memphis. It's new jazz, club swing music, and it's fun. It's from their 2013 album, Forward. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And guess what? It's Free Your Mind Friday on this wonderful program that brings people together. And the whole point of Free Your Mind Friday is to get things off your chest. Talk about things that are important from your perspective. Don't worry about what people are thinking. You let us know what you're thinking because you'll tell us. And then people would react if they choose to react. But the main thing is you're driving the vehicle today with your thoughts and opinions about current events or about anything you think warrants further discussion and debate. 888-874-4888 is a number to call. Break from the herd and be heard instead. Isn't that great? Good play on words. So 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Lots to talk about, I think, but that's not my job today. My job is to encourage you to talk and to put your stamp, whichever way it goes, put your stamp on it and let us know what you're thinking about what's in the news or things that may not even be in the news. But your opinion is the focus of the program. I love it that, well, as you know, I try in every single program to accommodate calls and opinions because that's the whole point. It's an interactive experience. And when we come to Free Your Mind Friday, to get out of the way altogether and have people take the conversation, whatever it is, their way. And we will just have to listen, react, or, you know, put something else on the table for consideration. Okay. So once again, the number is 888-874-4888. What have you to say today? Let's hear it. Jay from New York, you're on the top.
Yes, good afternoon, Eutrice. I'm going to be Hello. Real quick since I spoke yesterday. I would just like to say that there is a special place in hell for the members that are Republicans in Congress to do what they did yesterday in regards to the Affordable Care Act. The only thing that anybody could hope for is that the Senate will be able to push back on this draconian, whatever you want to call it, build, but just whatever, because it's going to harm more people than it ever will help people. And I think now I hope that those people that voted for Donald Trump will finally realize what classism is, because they are about to be in for one of the most rudest awakenings in regards to moving forward in their lives, because it's going to cost them more than they ever thought Obamacare or the Affordable Act was going to cost them. And it's just sad that, unfortunately, it doesn't seem that the Democratic Party has anything in place to move forward on the pushback on this.
Well, they seem to think that they have a good chance of challenging this repeal bill. In fact, Bernie Sanders, and that's an interesting aspect of it, Bernie Sanders is already out front saying that he's rallying, and there's a strong indication that the Democrats will get their act together to challenge it in the Senate. So this isn't done until it goes through the Senate. And frankly, I don't think we understand, we the people understand this bill, whether in its original form or its amended form, we don't understand what's going on here. And the reason we don't understand it too well is, just like the original bill, it's written by lawyers representing the industry. There is no logic when lawyers get involved in things to what finally ends up as the bill or the law. There are all kinds of loopholes, and it would take forever to actually get through the morass of legalese and where they've hidden advantages and pockets where they legally can extract the most money from what should be a straight business of providing care to people who desperately need it. The bill, whether the Obamacare bill or the Trump care bill, the primary focus in both situations has been what the industry will get out of this legislation. That is why their lawyers wrote it. So both of them are defective in that sense. It's more about how to sell it to the people, how to make people believe that this is a genuine desire, a patient-centered effort to deal, to help the people deal and to respond to a clear need to provide some kind of a sensible approach to containing the cost of care, and which is one thing, but we're not seeing that the primary objective is health. It's not a healthcare system. It's an insurance industry system. And the greater attention is being given to things like cost. I'm not suggesting that we ignore costs completely. But in both cases, whether the Obama bill or the Trump bill, the emphasis has been about what the insurance industry will get out of this, and their lawyers are the ones writing and rewriting this bill. So I dare anybody on the planet to tell me specifically where in both versions of this bill, where do we see the attention, the primary focus being placed on the health of the patient? It's just not there. So both of them are defective, but we will see what the Democrats come up with as a response. But keep in mind, the bill does not become final until it goes through the U.S. Senate. We'll see what they have to say there.
Well, let's just hope somebody...
Sorry. Go ahead.
Narrative. Let's just hope that somebody put forward the analysis that you just laid out, because there's a lot of people who are going to be out in the streets protesting and all of these things and really don't understand, like you said, what they're protesting about. And hopefully in the years ahead, it will lead to single payer. But let me give you the last laugh. The clown, the fool, the idiot sits next to the president of, I think it was Australia, and tells him how good his health care is, not knowing or realizing that they have single payer. It just gets more funny and funny every time that fool opens up his mouth. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Jay, for calling in. Joel, how are you? Joel from New York.
I'm from Detroit.
Hello?
I'm here.
Okay, good. So continue.
I called to answer questions you asked yesterday. And
Joel, here's the thing. You're cracking up, and I don't mean it in a funny way. The sound is going in and out. So it's very, very hard to hear what it is you're saying. It's all fractured up. Do you want to try calling again? We'll look out for you and see if it is a smoother connection.
Let's try for 1 minute. If it doesn't work,
okay, it sounds better now. It sounds a bit better. So let's go. Let's go ahead with it.
All right. I called to answer questions that you asked yesterday.
Okay.
And one question you asked was the you asked about Hillary Clinton and her statement about that her statement on that she's coming back and she's meeting with this I don't know group that's named Mega Eggers, a place that means it's named after Mega Eggers. And
yes, she is the the news that we broke here, not in the sense that we amplified it, was that Hillary Clinton is slated to be the commencement speaker for Medgar Evers College in Brooklyn. It's a predominantly African-American and Caribbean student body at Medgar Evers. And as you know, Medgar Evers is considered one of the saints of the civil rights movement, who was assassinated for the work that he did. He was killed. So there's a strong feeling that especially at commencement, you know, you should, if you're going to have a commencement speaker and then also give that speaker an honorary doctorate, at some point there ought to be an alignment between who was selected to do that and to receive an honorary doctorate in the name of Medgar Evers, and the person should embody the principles and the character and so forth of Medgar Evers. Hillary Clinton's just, she doesn't even register on the radar in this regard. So there's going to be a protest, and I'm supporting it quite openly. In fact, I insist that we support this to compel the president of Medgar Evers to rescind this honorary doctorate and giving her the privilege to make a commencement speech. She does not deserve it. She does not qualify, and she has no place being honored with these symbols of appreciation by a predominantly black college. What are your thoughts?
What relates to it is the Democratic Party, and one person said that the Democratic Party has no vision, and we already have a party that's available. The Green Party that has a vision has the 10 key values, and it doesn't rely on corporate funding. That differs from the Republican and Democratic Party. And another thing is, I just got some news that the people who voted for Bernie Sanders and other Democratic Party, grassroots Democratic Party people, are suing the DNC, the court, and the DNC lawyers are basically saying we are a private corporation with no obligation to follow our rules, the bylaws of the party. In other words, they're saying that they have a right to rig the election. And that was from IVN News, Independent Voting Network News, and also on RT American News, RT News, RT.com/USA. And that's what I wanted to add yesterday in that discussion.
Yes, thank you. The issue with the Democratic Party essentially saying it's an island unto itself. It doesn't really have to go by. It can go around the process and the election process in a way and elect its own people and do its own thing. It need not comply or even recognize the rules. The larger rules, they're not exactly laws, but they are established rules by which political parties are supposed to be operating. They're saying they can make their own. After all, this is an intra-party process, and the party therefore has the right to put together its own rules as it sees fit. Well, we'll see. Is there any wonder that the Democratic Party is in the shambles that it's in? Thank you, Joel, for your call. I really appreciate it. Clara from Philly, how are you?
Fine. How are you, Idris?
I'm hanging in. I hope you are, too.
Well,
it really frustrates the enemy.
I just got home from a knee replacement, and I'm working on getting back on my feet, so to speak. But I wanted to say something about that, just in response to what the woman before me brought up, Medgar Evers University. I'm so glad that decision of his is going to be protested, but I think it needs to go further. I think he needs to be outed from that university for that decision. I think that
wouldn't be the first time that he has been chased out of a position of influence.
Well, maybe hopefully this would be the last. I don't know who he is, but I've heard from you what he did.
It's anyway. Dr. Rudy Crewe is his name.
Okay, Rudy Crewe. Okay, I'll look him up. What I called about was some things you asked yesterday. What are we going to do? What are we going to do in the face of, you know, what's going on politically here in general? I think that we need to ignore both parties. I think that we need to focus on our own strengths and utilize them. Nobody cares a damn about us. Get that through We live in a criminal police state, and we have to either learn to operate in it, within it, with the least amount of any kind of violence, and or get out. Those of us who are fortunate enough might get out. I say that because I don't see much future. It's hard for me now to see much future in this country for black people. The poorest of us are being shot down in the streets. The most successful of us are being thrown into jail. People should look at, take a lesson from the RB6. Take a lesson. These are people who tried, who were educated, trained, very successful businessmen who knew what they thought they knew what they were doing when they aligned themselves with the system and created a product that would make it easier for the police state to operate. Then they apparently, maybe it was stolen from them and they were thrown into jail. Take that as an example. I think of that in the same way as I do the Black Wall Street. The higher you go, the more vulnerable you might be.
But let me ask you, I agree with you about the fact that the circumstances that we have found ourselves in and we've been experiencing on an ongoing basis, I think, legitimize your point of view. However, do you see where an infrastructure exists that would support that kind of decision for people to opt out? Is there a viable infrastructure, economically, politically, socially, whatever, to sustain a decision to leave? And or does it matter at all if one exists or doesn't exist at the moment, that the most important thing right now is to just to make the break?
Well, it's hard to make the break. To answer your question, I don't see an infrastructure. That's something that needs to be created by the community. I still believe that one by one we can begin to, one person connects with another, two people connect with four people. It happens over time. Maybe within one generation we might have that infrastructure. It might only take one generation.
Mm-hmm.
It steps. You stop. I've said this before. You stop buying anything you don't absolutely need. That, when you buy something, you support the system. When you get sick, don't try not to get sick. Learn how to take care of yourself. When I was in the hospital, these nurses kept saying, how do you do it? At 83, how can you be in this condition? What are you eating? These are medical people asking me. I told them about PRN. I said, I can't tell you everything, but it's all out there. I mean,
I think we all need to take
care of ourselves. Everybody says, every time we get sick, it benefits the system. We're feeding into, we become part of the GNP. I mean, these are just examples.
I think you have a point here. I support your point about people being very deliberate in cutting their ties with a system that isn't responding to them. Just today, for example, they're touting the fact that unemployment is down, I mean, significantly down. And this is a great coup for the Trump administration. But, of course, we know that the figures that are reported in the very report itself, they are two sets of figures. The figure that they tout is a figure relating to whites in America. You have to, and it's symbolic, the real figure to get the real picture of the employment situation in the United States, you got to go to the back of the report. where they take a solid look at what the unemployment figures are for African Americans, Latinos, and others. The main thrust and the main concern, even about things like employment, is to deal with the reality for whites. It doesn't in any way. That's a whole set of other figures. You've got to go to the back of the report. And that's the way it's been for years. The media would not make an effort to correct that. So I said that to indicate my agreement with you that what we think is the reality is not the reality. It's the reality, as far as this country says, that for the people who, quote, matter, unquote. That's the concern. The concern about the rest of the people, the concern specifically about people of color, it's a distant, it comes a distant second or third. But we have to make up our minds. I agree with you 100% in this regard. We have to find an alternative. We have more than enough examples going back even into the 1800s and 1700s and the 1600s as to how people, in the face of devastating realities, constructed some kind of a way out that worked for them and that aided their survival. So it's not that we don't have solutions. It's not that we don't have paradigms. We have more than enough. We just need to get serious and get to it.
Well, I think people still believe there's a future for them here. I think black people are deluded into thinking there's some hope. There is none here, and within any of the systems, unless we can stay here and develop our own communities and our own constructs. But that's not the way we're thinking. We're thinking about reform. We're thinking about the Democratic Party. We're thinking about this bad insurance plan against another one. You know, what about Bernie Sanders? What about Hillary? I don't give a damn about those people. And there's nothing that they have to offer.
Well, you sound like you're in good fighting spirits again, so I'm delighted to hear from you. I'm glad that you're in good shape and getting better, and I'm so happy to hear your voice today. Thanks for calling. Let's go to North Carolina. Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, Utrice. How are you today?
Fine, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. I'm ready to free up some things, I tell you. These greedy social Darwinist Republicans in the House of Representatives have shown exactly who they are and what they're about. And the problem is that it's a lot like haggling. And I'm glad you explained to the folks, some maybe don't realize that this is just the beginning, because it has to go through some more process before. It's not law yet, obviously. But the problem is that it's like when you haggle in a market, a bar has been set. So I fear that unless we put pressure on the Senate, some of these positions will be held. Some of these stipulations in this bill will be held over before it gets marked up and such, you know, goes through the process, which is why we need to be on the phones with our congressmen, because these people are evil, because they really are social Darwinists, and they really just don't care. They figure it's just too many useless eaters in this country or whatever. You know, they have a different mindset. And they forget that we don't live in a bubble, and it's dangerous to have sick people around in your society, not to mention it's immoral, because we do have the money to take care of sick people. And these same people are the ones who have money to go out to these restaurants and eat fancy dinners, and they don't think about who's making their food, and they're only getting paid $10 an hour and won't have any health care and will have TB and other communicable diseases as they fix their food. So that's how silly they are. That's who hubristic and behaviorist people are. You know, and in addition, these folks have been abdicating their duties and responsibilities, because they have ignored the fact that I'm not going to say president. This person who occupies the White House is mentally ill, and he's mentally ill and just nasty and mean, and the 25th Amendment should be invoked. It should have been already. They're not enforcing the law with the emoluments clauses. You know, he makes money every time he goes to Mar-a-Lago. They have to pay. It's a membership club. Those people have to pay $200,000 to set foot on that property. And if you're not a member, someone has to vouch for you, and you still have to pay a fee, not to mention the Secret Service. So, you know, it's graft and thievery left and right. I mean, this person will steal as much as he can, as fast as he can, and that's exactly what they're doing. But back to the health care, I have not heard if the 20% rule is still in effect. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
No.
Okay. Well, with the Affordable Care Act, it was mandated that 80% of the funds had to go to direct health care. In other words, only 20% could be used for administrative costs, you know, as a cost-cutting measure for efficiency. I haven't heard if that's still in action.
Look, here's the thing I know. Both versions were completely inadequate, are completely inadequate. We had major problems from the very beginning, and the very beginning was with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
When Bill Clinton was president, Hillary Clinton assigned herself essentially a cabinet-level position. She did not get to be brought before that body to be questioned about it. She just went. They went around the process so that Hillary Clinton essentially functioned as a cabinet member in putting together this so-called health care plan, which was done in secret, and it was a hand-picked group, hand-picked by Hillary Clinton, from the insurance industry. And they put this thing together. They handed it the ball. They handed the ball to Barack Obama to get through Congress, which they did in the dead of night. This was not discussed by Congress as a whole. There was no input except from the insurance industry. So it was just an appalling thing. And they gave Obama the job to get it done through Congress, although Congress had no input in it. It does not in any way place the priority on patient care. It is a bill that understood there's a lot of money to be made here, because whether people are benefited or not, the insurance industry, the healthcare industry, those are the people for whom this bill was crafted. It assured them. And, of course, the sponsors, the Clintons, and they're all about money. Look how much
Absolutely.
Money they liberated from everything they did. The health care issue, the boondoggle, was going to be a never-ending stream of revenue for the Clintons, particularly, and for the industry leaders themselves. And as we see, even after retirement, the healthcare industry maintains its fidelity to a resigned president, right? He
Yep.
is still, he's still making money. They're all making money. And the industry crafted how this would go. Hillary Clinton knows nothing about healthcare. Bill Clinton doesn't know anything about health care, and
right.
they involved no one who does.
No,
so,
it's a business. They have to take the business out of it. This business, the money has to come out of it. It's about making healthy people, keeping people healthy. But the whole system is corrupt.
But the point I'm making is that what we know as Obamacare was rooted in a single premise. How does the how do a few insiders basically put together a scheme? It's more like a scam that involves hundreds of billions of dollars over time. That's their secured business model to keep them going. And that's what they did. This bill, Obamacare, never, Obamacare was not a piece of legislation that involved Congress or involved people in the industry, people who are healthcare advocates. It didn't involve any of them. Hillary Clinton called her buddies or people in the industry that they can, quote, work with, and they came up with stuff. And then it got sanctioned in the dead of night, literally in the dead of night, when nobody else was around. They pulled a vote, and suddenly it became law, and that is Obamacare. They gave it to the black guy that they owned in the first place. You go sell this. You tell people what a great thing this is, and that's exactly what he has done. So we have the other version now. This is now Trump Care, which is an obscenity on the other side of the line. Nowhere in all of this do we have a competent approach, a genuine approach to this question. And it's a massive question about what does a nation that understands the need to provide parameters for competent health care, how do we approach that? Right. And, in the meantime, people who desperately need a working health care system, we're caught.
Our health being used as a vehicle for these folks to make money at our expense.
That's what it is. This has very little to do with health care, actual health care. You would understand all of the discussion so far all have to do with money, how you save money, how you spend money, how much money is going to be gained through these different programs. It's a money program.
Wow.
This has very little to do with healthcare. And we can point the finger not at the Republicans, let's be very clear about this, the Democrats, and specifically the Clintons. They brought in their pals, they brought in the people friendly to them. Hillary Clinton operated illegally, in my view, as a cabinet member. She did not have to go before the Senate to be confirmed. She did not have to be vetted. Bill Clinton, her husband, gave her this portfolio, which correctly belongs to somebody with experience and expertise, and which should have followed the procedure of vetting so that a Secretary of Health and Human Services, she didn't have to do that. She bypassed that. And they brought together their people and came up with, under the disguise of a health care plan, it was really a business deal, a series of business deals guaranteeing billions of dollars to selected people in the industry who would do their duty and pay back. It's the same model that they had with the Clinton Foundation. These are serious. These are not just regular thieves. These are serious and committed thieves.
Wow.
And that's how we got Obamacare. Yeah, they throw a little morsel or so to the unfortunate public, who are thinking that they have some kind of healthcare protection. But this was revenue protection and revenue insurance for the industry. That's what it was. That's what it is. Even if it should change under Trump care, it still is operating on the same premise. And it means the insurance industries are driving driving this so-called social benefit. And it's a profit center. The patient care has a distant concern here.
Terrible. May I take one thing?
I'm trying to how I turn this phone off. That's how competent I am. Okay, great. I've done the job.
You tree?
But yes.
May I thank you for one thing? Well, for lots of things, but I don't know if it was last year or year before, but the information that you conveyed via your program about the history of Cinco de Mayo, that was a very great program.
Oh, thank you so much. I thought so too. And Dr. Bautista, I thought of playing it again today, but really it's Free Your Mind Friday. So we may catch up with it on another occasion, because it's information that people really do need to know. Thank you. And thanks for calling in. Michael from Virginia, you're on the air.
How are you doing?
Hello. I'm doing okay. How about you?
Lots of long-winded conversation on this topic that are distractions. The idea of obsessing or the subject matter of being Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton are diversions, I think. They are distractions. They are there's nothing to be gained by contemplating doing any comprehensive or forensic analysis on their behavior. They have lost all types of credibility. And the evidence is clear. It's so clear that it doesn't even have any credence or any merit to discuss it. You have a situation where since 1492, they have perfected the method of enslavement, and they, meaning the powers that be, the structure that we are living in, everyone is a slave to it. It crosses all demographics. You can actually see it for yourself. The Women's March that took place a few months ago is a clear example that white Anglo-Saxon women of any sexual persuasion, even they have had enough. They had enough of Hillary and our man Donald Trump, and they have no credibility. And when you see and when you hear and feel and read and see on TV, they have no credibility on Fox News, MSNBC, or the major media, even the I would even suggest the so-called progressive media outlets. They've all been usurped and undermined by their federal funding or their funding, all of them, most of them. They're misinformation profiteers. And when you see all this and you gather this in your mind and you have a left hand, you have your right hand, you're capable of reading and making analysis for yourself, you have to tell to yourself and to your friends and family that you're not going to entertain the people who are in decision-making authority. You have to find a way of removing them from their decision-making authority, from the local level to the state and federal level. And if you have any questions, I'll be able to answer them for you right now.
Well, here's a question I pose to you. I don't disagree that there's an urgent need to change leadership and direction. But with what infrastructure? You know, right now, for example, the Democratic Party is prime this is perhaps what is behind Bernie Sanders' move into the Democratic Party in a more, in a fuller sense than before. But what do the masses of people do? How do we persuade the masses of people to invest not only in a more independent and more aggressively independent way of thinking, but a more independent and aggressive way of acting to protect their political interests? So it is important. We have to think of both. And it is not a sequential thing that first you disrupt and you take over those systems that are malfunctioning and you fashion them to your likeness and so forth. The question is, how do you sustain independent effort? What happens after you have accomplished your goal of bringing sanity to the whole process of living in the United States? Okay, well, let's hypothesize and say you've achieved that. What do you do to have a sustaining infrastructure to bolster the intentions that informed your actions?
The clear way, which is many different parallel narratives. It's not one or the other, and the technology and information age is here, where we are beyond criticizing or pointing fingers at those who think it's idealistic. There's nothing idealistic or naive or willful thinking or wishful thinking that will come out of my mouth now. The technology and information age and the infrastructure is there. It's already there. It's not being utilized. And the first thing you need to do, anyone who wants to do, to get off the grid, is to do a revocation of election. You can order the forms. You can revoke your election privileges from the election board, which is not credible. It has no faith that your vote does count. And when you do vote, it's not going to affect anything. So it's called the revocation of election. Hold on. And that also applies to the Internal Revenue Service as well.
What I'm saying, I listen to what you're saying, but that is not, in fact, how people live. These things are the work of a select few people. The vast majority of people are not interested in that, and they don't want the responsibility of that either. What they want to do is to live a more contented life. They want to be more productive. They want to be happier. They want to have at their service the kinds of things that would help them do that: schools that work, roads that are fine for travel. They want to have gainful employment. They're not interested in these forms, and they're not interested in the minute details. The vast majority of people simply want a better life for themselves and their children. So somebody, not all the people, because that's not going to happen, some group of people will be dedicated to the fine details of securing recognition of new parties and new ways of operating at the local level. That's fine. The vast majority of people are not interested in that, nor should they be blamed for not being interested in that. They're interested in, within their capacity, what can they do to achieve their modest goals and objectives? And that is to live a decent, contented life, productive life. That's the vast majority of people. You cannot point to any situation right now, and that's part of the planning process that we have to get over. We can't wait, and we will not achieve the lofty goal of getting everybody on board with some of these things that you're pointing out. It's not going to happen. Human nature says people would tend to look out for themselves first rather than join a collective effort. So you have to craft an appeal that is practical, that is doable, and that is achievable within a reasonable length of time. And let people, you know, go the next step themselves. The main thing is to accommodate the masses first. And then people who wish to specialize can go off and specialize and take the fight somewhere else at a different level. But one of the reasons we've had no movement or very little collective movement is that these very things have bogged movement down. They've slowed movement down. You have to go where people are. Where people are is basic stuff. I want a decent place to live. I want a job that pays enough for me to have a decent place to live. I want good schools for my kids and other basics. I want clean water to drink. These are the basics of life. You start there. And it will evolve because people may choose to take the fight to a different level. But you don't start at these highly sophisticated levels, which use up valuable organizing time. Your whole thing is you got to organize masses of people with all these various ways of thinking and operating and so forth. So you go for a common denominator. The common denominator is just as I said, a decent job, a sensible approach to governing, and you want them to be sincere about it and to see your sincerity about it. If we could do just that, that is a magnificent revolution right there. People who want to get more detailed have the opportunity to do that. But we can't start at that level because you're building in confusion when you should be avoiding it. Thanks so much for your call, Michael. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air. And with not too much time.
Wonderful, Yatrice. How are you today?
Good. How about you?
Great. Well, happy Cinco de Mayo. And I'd like to talk about Trump's really bad idea about building a wall between us and Mexico. I'm going to try to make lemonade out of lemons. And since I'm a solar energy advocate, here's my idea. The average solar panel is about 3.25 feet by 5.5 feet long and puts out around 265 watts electricity. And since there are about 5,280 feet per mile, and if you lay the solar panel side by side on the wall facing the sun, there will be approximately 1,624 solar panels per mile. And Trump wants the wall that's approximately 1,300 miles long. So that would be that would support over 2 million solar panels and put out millions of watts of electricity. So I think Trump's wall is a really stupid idea and a waste of time. But if we have to build it, let's make it generate clean, renewable electricity.
Okay, if it's a bad idea, at least let's get some benefit out of the bad ideas, your view. Well, thank you for that. Thanks for that thought.
Thank you
all for calling in today. We've come to the end of the program, and it is necessary, absolutely necessary, that we continue the tradition of talking to each other, talking out loud, not caring, really. It is not about whether people agree or disagree. It is about being heard. And in being heard, you may be surprised at the degree of influence that you actually do have. People would be listening, and you may possibly be responsible for changing minds, educating people, and this is the point of the program. So I thank you for participating in the program with that in mind. It's a joy, always. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus, and you know you could count on him to learn something new. You can reach me at leadstories, L-E-I-D, stories at gmail.com. It's Friday, meaning you're going into the weekend. Surround yourselves with very positive people who add dimension to your life. Put on your sneakers and run like hell away from people who aren't able to do that. A pleasure always and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.